Continuing with Canto 3, Chapter 32, I'm going to discuss texts 37 and 38, hopefully. From the last discussion on this section, if you recall, Kapila Dev was describing the object of meditation of the devotee. And he was describing the meditation upon the beautiful features of the Supreme Lord. And I said that I would read some nice passages, selected passages where darshan of the Lord's form, meditation upon Krishna's beautiful form. Of course, Kapila is speaking to Devahuti, so his form is also beautiful. But here's Krishna's form, being described in the 10th canto, chapter 55. The women of the palace thought he was Lord Krishna when they saw his dark blue complexion, the color of a rain cloud, his yellow silk garments, his long arms and red-tinged eyes, his charming lotus face adorned with a pleasing smile, his fine ornaments and his thick, curly, blue hair. Thus, the women became bashful and hid themselves here and there. Then, here's another from Antyalila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. My dear friend, the luster of Krishna's body is more brilliant than a newly formed cloud, and his yellow dress is more attractive than newly arrived lightning. A peacock feather decorates his head, and on his neck hangs a lovely necklace of brilliant pearls. As he holds his charming flute to his lips, his face looks so beautiful, as beautiful as the full autumn moon. By such beauty, Madan Mohan, the enchanter of Cupid, is increasing the desire of my eyes to see him. And there's so many more that we spoke about. Prabhupada's description of the importance of deity worship, and side by side with deity worship, hearing from scriptures that are describing Krishna's beautiful form and features, and of course Krishna's pastimes and exchanges of love, Krishna's teachings. Here it's Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti, and these are all very powerful means of bringing the mind to Krishna. It's all forms of devotional service, because hearing about Krishna is also devotional service. Chanting about Krishna is also devotional service. Sometimes devotees get a little confused when they have service to do and they like to do service, and somehow that service crowds out their chanting, as if chanting is not service. So chanting is also service. Hearing is also service. Remembering is also. The first three of the nine processes of devotional service are those, besides the practical things that we do in our day-to-day lives. we're impelled by the motive passion, and so we don't consider those as services sometimes, and the other things we do, that's service. But that's those are the foundation resting places of service, the other forms of service, without which it's karma yoga, not bhakti yoga. It's the consciousness of doing for Krishna side by side with chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, following the regulations of bhakti yoga. Because the awakened state of devotion is brought about by those hearing, chanting, and remembering, and praying, bandhanam, processes. So then we heard, in addition to the meditation of the devotee upon Krishna, some things about how Krishna wants to see the devotees decorated with transcendental qualities and liberation, because the devotee is now, Bhimadeva speaking of the higher stages of bhakti, where desire for other things is gone. Desire for other things is gone because one is feeling so full in devotional service, the desire for other things is gone. And so if offered those other things, the answer is no thank you. But Krishna decorates his devotee with those things anyways. We discussed about liberation. And because devotional service is from the platform of liberation, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, when when devotional service is being factually conducted, the devotee is already on the liberated platform. So they can say no all they like, but they're already there. They don't have to separately aspire for liberation. They aspire for the quality of devotion which carries with it the platform of liberation. Besides that's wonderful. It's a lot easier to understand than the next set of things that are being described. And that is that the opulences we discussed, the opulences of mystic cities, not aspired for by the devotee, but Krishna is ready to give. The opulences of the heavenly planets. So certainly there are more persons in this world that aspire for the heavenly planets than for mystic cities. Far more common. There are some persons that are interested in mystic cities. But in either case, they're material. We discussed that. Very elaborately and eloquently, Prabhupada discusses that in Nectar Devotion. Mystic cities are nothing but material, subtle manipulation of subtle material laws by one who has subtle material consciousness, and they can achieve subtle material things. Flying, you can do with a machine, or you can do without a machine if you have mystic cities. Riding on the water in a boat, or walking on water by mystic city. And so many other things, becoming big, becoming small. It's manipulation of subtle material laws. They're material. The devotee doesn't care for that because they care for one thing. They're full. There's no room for anything else. It's no thank you. It's like when you've eaten a full meal and somebody offers you something more. It's not difficult to say no thank you. And sometimes rudely they put it on your plate anyways. That's a cultural thing I never really understood. It's supposed to be nice, but yeah, it's not nice. Don't force someone. Anyway, and then it's no thank you, because I'm full. I'm full with my devotion to Krishna. I simply want service to Krishna. But the message that we heard was that at the fingertips of the devotee, if they simply desire, Krishna is ready to supply, that it's already there. A nice example is Maharaj Ambarish and defending himself against the fiery demon that was created by Durvasa Muni, the mystic. Maharaj Ambarish didn't do anything. But the personality of Godhead did something. It's mentioned earlier in that section that Maharaj Ambarish was so dear to Lord Vishnu that previous to this, Lord Vishnu expanded his own Sudarshan chakra and said, stand by his side. If at any time he needs protection, you protect him. So Lord Vishnu didn't have to jump and say, hey, wait a minute, Durvasa Muni, stop that, and I'm going to send my Sudarshan chakra. It was already done. The expansion of his Sudarshan chakra stopped the fiery demon and then pursued Durvasa Muni. So the devotee doesn't need some separate endeavor because the Lord is there. Yoga kshema vaham, you know, whatever the devotee requires, it's there. Whatever they have, it's preserved. Because what is, we're going to hear today from the next upcoming verses, the things that are the devotee's possessions are not destroyed by time. And the key to understand this is their possessions are the Lord. I'll say it again. Their possessions are the Lord. Because what can we say is mine, factually speaking? We could say, we commonly say, my body. But here today, gone tomorrow. Or the next day, it's gone. So how can we say it's mine? Or any other thing, fill in the blank. My car, my bank balance, my house. April 15th. My taxes. Whatever it is that we say is mine, it's taken from us, so it's not mine. And even the soul we know is an energy of Krishna, it's not mine. Even we, on the soul platform, can't say that's mine. So what's mine? Our relationship with Krishna is, that's what's mine. And no one can take that from me. Time won't take it from me. Another person won't take it. Even Krishna won't take that from me. It's mine. Truly, that's mine. And that's the possession that the devotee takes shelter of. So that's coming up. So I'm going to read now text 37. Kapila Deva again speaking to Devahuti. Thus, because he is completely absorbed in thought of me, the devotee does not desire even the highest benediction obtainable in the upper planetary systems, including Satyaloka. He does not desire the 8 material perfections obtained from mystic yoga, nor does he desire to be elevated to the kingdom of God. Yet, even without desiring them, the devotee enjoys, even in this life, all the offered benedictions. So he's saying no, and he gets them anyways. At least they're accessible, and that's what we covered this actually. There's Prabhupada's phrase A devotee does not aspire for all these material pleasures, although they are available to him simply by wishing. And even wishing, just reach out and they're there. So the devotee enjoys, it's that's Vaikuntha. The opulences that exist in Vaikuntha are the Lord's opulences. The devotee is there with the Lord's opulences, but the devotee in Vaikuntha is not thinking, oh, look at this opulence, hey, look at that opulence, I'm going to enjoy. That enjoying the opulences of the Lord consciousness is gone. That's Vaikuntha consciousness. So one who is in this realm, pure devotee, there's so many opulences made available to that devotee. They're not thinking. If they're in Vaikuntha consciousness, they're not thinking, oh, here's some object. Vishaya Vinivartante. Let me enjoy sense gratification with this opulence. That's not, they're beyond that consciousness. And because they're beyond that consciousness, Krishna bestows facilities. But those facilities are for service. They're not for sense enjoyment. And so they can take more and more and more and more and more and not become bewildered, not become enamored, not lose it and forget Krishna and jump into the pool of sense gratification. Now, the potential is always there because living as these is marginal. Potential can go this way or that way. But they don't go that way. They only go to Krishna because that's their fixed consciousness. So he's describing, Kapila Deva is describing, that the state, even in this life, of that condition, of the highest attainment of consciousness, pure devotional service to Krishna, then text number 38, the Lord continued, my dear mother, and Prabhupada points out in the purport that my dear mother is Shanta Rupe. She's there. She's in that state of consciousness. She's not bewildered. She's Shanta. She's peaceful. She's the form of peacefulness. That's a pure devotee. They're not disturbed, whether this kind of duality or that kind of duality. Their consciousness is unchanged because she, Devahuti, Shanta Rupe, is fixed in her relationship with Krishna. Her relationship is mother, Vatsalya. But Shanta Rupe can apply to any one of the rasas, and fixed in that relationship with the Personality of Godhead, having access to so many opulences doesn't disturb one. Not having so many opulences doesn't disturb one. Indifferent to duality. Or even blessings and benedictions, or the opposite. Calamity and reversals and tribulation. Indifferent. That's Krishna consciousness. So, my dear mother, devotees who receive such transcendental opulences are never bereft of them. Neither weapons nor the change of time can destroy such opulences. So this is a semicolon in between those two phrases. The time factor is a big item that's discussed in the purport because it's in the verse, and it, the essence is there's time as we know it, past, present, and future, and there's eternal time, no past, only present, and no future. Eternally present. One can go this way or that way in time, laterally, any way you like. And it's just eternal. There's no end. There's no beginning. It's not something that we can, with our binary processor, the mind, we can't compute that one. just because it's either this or it's that. It can't be neither this nor that. It doesn't fit the model of a binary processor. It doesn't fit within the mind. But the devotee, one who's fixed in Krishna consciousness, experiences that timelessness, and because it's time that brings things into being. That was discussed in earlier chapters of Kapila Dev's teachings, the whole of Samkhya philosophy, how the unfolding of creation takes place, and the elements of creation first before the creation. And before the elements unfold, there's time. And before there's time, there's eternal time. And Krishna releases or injects eternal time into this material atmosphere and past, present, and future kind of sense of time, the illusory sense of time, that which it brings things into being. And it also destroys things. So the opulences available to the devotee are not brought about by time as we know it. It's Krishna. So time doesn't create them, time doesn't destroy them. That means as they eternally engage in Krishna service, those opulences are eternally available, even in this realm, and after this lifetime, and wherever that soul in pure consciousness goes, those opulences are available by Krishna's arrangement, not by the arrangement of time. It's like Ahoituki Apratyataya Yatma Supersedati. That verse, Vasudeva Bhagavati. We mentioned that. It's in this chapter also. Almost the same as the first canto, chapter 2, text 7. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha. Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha. Unto Vasudeva. Pure devotional service unto Krishna. Causelessly, Ahasaki. When devotional service is causelessly rendered, it brings complete satisfaction to the self, and likewise knowledge and detachment arise. But one becomes equipped with these are opulences. There are six opulences of the Supreme Lord. Two of them are mentioned, knowledge and detachment, or knowledge and renunciation. In perfection that they're in Krishna, and the soul in connection with Krishna manifests these opulences. And they're available to that devotee. It's not circumstantial, it's constitutional. Because of being situated in that relationship of devotional service. So we don't need some separate endeavor to go out and get some degree in something or other. Develop some knowledge so we have some opulence. Or strive for renunciation. We may curtail certain activities because they're just not offerable to Krishna. They're not appropriate Krishna service. But diminishing the so many things that people in material consciousness want to have around them and consider that's opulence, it's clutter. The devotee likes simplicity. And with that simplicity, freeing their consciousness for contemplation on topics of Krishna and how to expand and increase devotional service to Krishna for one's own purification and the benefit of others, service unto others. That is as an opulence. Detachment and knowledge. So those opulences are not created by time, they're not destroyed by time. That's the statement. Because the devotees accept me as their friend, their relative, their son, preceptor, benefactor, and supreme deity, they cannot be deprived of their possessions at any time. So, what are their possessions? Take, your computer. Does this mean you become a devotee and you never have to get another computer? You don't have to worry about the warranty. You just, it's never going to break down and it's always going to be your computer. You go to the spiritual world with your computer. That's not what it means. Or your clothing, or your shoes, or whatever it is, your possessions. We discussed that already, that the possessions of the devotee is Krishna. That's mine. You're never deprived of that. And that which is to facilitate your devotion to Krishna, that which you need for your devotional service to Krishna, Krishna will supply. And if Krishna doesn't supply, it's okay. You can serve Krishna some other way, or some other way, and some other way. It's okay. We can utilize something, and if that something is gone, we're happy to serve Krishna in some other way. That's the principle of Yukta Vairagya. We can use, Prabhupada would point to the microphone, literally, like this, the microphone. What is it? It's material. And he would describe the elements. There's some metal, there's some plastic, there's some other components. There's some petroleum products, plastic. So it's material. But we can use this material thing in service to Krishna, and then it acts in a spiritual way. So we're not attached if we don't have the microphone, we'll do something else. What happened when Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, and then following that, Sutta Goswami spoke what he heard from Shukadeva Goswami, there's a very large assembly. Some hundreds or thousands of people. They didn't have one of these. And, the amplification system. Somehow, they got by. So if facility is there in service to Krishna, you can use if the facility is no longer there. You serve Krishna in another way. There are two nice Prabhupada story examples of this that I like. One of them I heard, one of them I directly experienced. One time, the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada if they could have him pose for some pictures that they could put on the altar and use for what we call that Guru Garanga altar. So that, a picture of Panchatattva. It's catching. Got another one over here. Excuse me. So Prabhupada agreed, but Prabhupada took the opportunity to give some instruction. So maybe you have seen both of these photographs. But the first one, Prabhupada, he choreographed the whole thing. He dressed in very simple cotton dhoti, without kurta, and he went outdoors. It had a big shade tree in the background. It was a bright summer day, so he stood right at the edge of where the shade was and the sunlight was. So in the background was dark. Good photography plan. But he was receiving direct sunlight, so he was very bright. And he stood there with his danda, standing straight, very serious looking, sadhu. And they took pictures. Dark background, big green foliage tree, shady, bright sunlight. And then after the photographer had taken their photos, he then went to the second stage for photographs, and he changed clothes. He had them make some silk, bright orange, freshly dyed silk, and the background was a purple crushed velvet backdrop. Opulent. The sannyasi who was opulent. So he came out to where the photographer was and where the devotees were, and he stood there very elegantly and held his hand like this and turned around very slowly. like did a pirouette and smiled and said, for Krishna we can accept anything. It was a message. This or that, for Krishna's service, this is fine and that is fine. For Krishna's service. He looked around, everyone got it. And then the photographer took the picture. Maybe you've seen the crushed purple velvet backdrop and bright orange dhoti. Prabhupada Bhikkhu Samadhi didn't have a zanda. It was, you know, the opulence, some sannyasa. Prabhupada was very conscious of what he was doing, wasn't he? Stumbled onto something. Here's another little experience. When Prabhupada was with us in the early 70s, mid 70s, where our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan was very far from Vrindavan town. And it wasn't developed. It was on the left side of the road and the right side of the road, there was nothing. And beyond from the Vrindavan town, there was nothing. Just agricultural fields. Now it's New Bombay or something. But then, so the procedure for the morning walk was around 6 o'clock. Prabhupada went out that little side gate up the alley and made a right-hand turn when he hit the main road. Now Bhaktivedanta Swami Mark made a right-hand turn and walked for about a mile plus. And it was nothing on this side, nothing on that side. And it's now gone. But there was a forest. Simple little forest. Not like a big jungle, but a simple forest. On the right-hand side of the road. And Prabhupada liked going into that forest area and walking around in the little paths in the forest. And he was, one morning, he was describing how nice it is to live in Vrindavan. Living very simply, just whatever nature supplies. And he reached out to one of the trees and there were little pods growing and he asked somebody, are these edible like this? He pulled some off the tree and said, you can take what nature supplies and accept that and your economic necessities are finished. Then he continued walking, and where that forested area was, it was like up on a hill, and down the hill, sharp decline or incline, over in that direction was a little cottage. And he said, "See over there? Next to the cottage, there's a cow, and a sadhu can go early in the morning at the time of milking the cow, and he has his cup." And he asks the householder for a cup of milk. And any householder will give it to a sadhu a cup of milk. And together with these whatever natural supplies, the whole rest of the day is for cultivation of Krishna consciousness. This is Vrindavan. He was immersed in that mood. And so because Prabhupada was who he was, he's a guru. Guru means heavy. When he got into a certain mood, everyone was carried by that mood. So we were in this renunciation, living in Vrindavan, simplicity. And then, just like that, he turned to Brahmananda and said, did you receive the $50,000? you're supposed to go and check the color separations for the new publication. Did you do that? What was the quality? Are you sure? Double check and make sure. And then as if he didn't even do that, but he was doing it deliberately, he went back into the how nice it is to live in Vrindavan and be detached and renounced. And then again he made the statement that whatever one does, it's for the service of Krishna. If it's living simply, one is happy to live very simply. And if there's some other service to be done for Krishna, one is happy to do that other service for Krishna. It's not like I have to have complexity or I can't be happy. Or I have to have it very, very stark and bare, otherwise I can't be happy. It's service to Krishna, then I can be happy. And then in that particular morning, it also happened that there was one devotee, Yasomati Nandana, Yasoda Nandana, and he was trying to keep up with everybody, but he had bare feet and were going through the forest, and he stepped on a thorn. So he started hopping along on one foot to keep up with everybody, and Prabhupada stopped and turned and said, "Yasoda Nandana, what are you doing? Where are your shoes?" I saw the morning walk procession leaving and I left my shoes. I couldn't find my shoes. He said, "You should take care of this body. It's meant for Krishna service. Look at you. You're hopping on your foot because you haven't taken care." So this is Yukta Vairagya. We're not simply interested in, oh, you're a sannyasi, you can't wear something on your feet. You go walking in the forest and then you can't walk anymore because you've got a hole in your foot. Yukta Vairagya is our principle, but Yukta Vairagya is based upon attachment to Krishna. And if you don't have attachment to Krishna and you try to apply the Yukta Vairagya principle, you know what's going to happen? You won't engage things in Krishna's service. Those things will engage you in Maya's service. That's what's going to happen if you're not attached to Krishna. So the principle of Yukta Vairagya is based upon attachment to Krishna. That's what's being described before these opulences are mentioned that the devotee has access to, and they're present in this lifespan. They stay with the devotee beyond this lifespan. They're not created by time or destroyed by time. Shanta Rupa, as Kapila is addressing his mother, indicates that the opulences of devotees are fixed, because devotees are eternally fixed in the Vaikuntha atmosphere, which is called Shanta Rupa, because it is in the mode of pure goodness, undisturbed by the modes of passion and ignorance. As soon as you start mixing with the modes of passion and ignorance, something else starts to happen. And, we can't automatically come to the pure goodness platform, but we certainly need to cultivate the pure goodness platform. Because even in the cultivation of the pure goodness platform, the modes of passion and ignorance that are there, they're going to create disturbances in the mind or in our activity or in our relationships with others. Mode of passion and ignorance spoil things. We have to work with what we have. We have to begin somewhere. We begin with whatever position we're in. But we cultivate pure devotional service. That's the sadhana stage, and the regulations of hearing and chanting and remembering and praying and worshipping. These are not material activities. There's nothing fruitive about chanting. That's one of the reasons that it's difficult to keep your mind on chanting. Because where's the fruitive gain? Peak materialists look at chanting and say, "You're wasting your time, man." You could be earning money, or you could be doing something that gets you in a position where you can earn more money. So, you're wasting your time. Sentimental fools. Etc. But it's not, if done properly, then chanting is the most powerful thing, and hearing and remembering in sequence, that they cleanse the heart and free us from those lower modes of nature. So one who is like Devahuti, Shantarupe, she's freed from that influence Time isn't creating her happiness. Time isn't taking away her happiness. Time is eternal. She's situated in her relationship with the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada writes, in the Vaikuntha atmosphere, there's no influence of the demigods or of time. So here, he writes that our activities are controlled by the demigods. Even the blinking of your eyelid, something that's involuntary. Your eyelids won't blink unless they're sanctioned by a demigod. Your food doesn't digest, etc., etc., without the sanction of a demigod. And that's based upon the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So, activities on this plane are dependent upon demigods and time. And activities of pure devotion, they're not dependent. There is dependence upon the personality of Godhead. But when that connection with the personality of Godhead is direct, there isn't some other thing that one needs to do, like propitiating demigods. It's not required. Therefore, there's no question of destruction. Things don't come into being and go out of being by time. Things aren't happening or not happening because of some demigod. There's no destruction. That's the point of the verse that Kapila Deva is saying. Their opulences can't be taken by time, and their relationships with the personality of God can't be taken by time. Nang Shanti indicates that the opulences are not destroyed. Then relationships. And go the other direction. Relationships of this world, they're temporary. And that means they're destroyed after some time. And then we lament. We celebrate. Oh! And then we lament. Oh! And so it goes over and over again. The rerun. Different varieties of oh! We just keep doing it. Like children. And for some people, the light goes on. Hey, wait a minute. Is there such a thing as a relationship that's not temporary? And so the relationship with the personality of Godhead, Kapila Deva is stating, he's not only advocating, he's declaring it. That's a relationship that's not created by time. The one who's situated in that relationship is not destroyed by time either. Relationships cannot be destroyed in the spiritual realm. And therefore, the opulences of those relationships are also never destroyed. And Prabhupada speaks about cats and dogs. So if you don't have a relationship, you know that one. Because we don't have a relationship with God, we want a relationship with someone and something, and if it's not somebody, then it's a dog. I'm not sure of this, but I think that the Fisher Mansion, the Detroit Temple, was purchased. Very interesting, Detroit history. Alfred Ford's grandson and Walter Reuther's granddaughter. When Walter Reuther was the leader of the union people that built the Ford motor cars. So Walter Reuther and Henry Ford were, at each other, at the opposite ends of the stick. The auto workers union was always having issues with the management, Henry Ford and his, management people, labor and management disputes. And Walter Reuther was the head. So it was actually the daughter of Walter Reuther and the grandson of Henry Ford, they bought the Fisher Mansion with the assets of their inheritance in both Walter Reuther and Henry Ford. And the mansion that was built was Fisher, like body by Fisher. The chassis were made by Mr. Fisher. So Mr. Fisher, whatever his first name is, didn't have children, but he had dogs. So in his will, he willed his fortune to guess who? His dogs. He was, a lonely guy and had kept dogs instead of children. they will misfortune to the dogs. Apparently. So if one doesn't have God at the center, they have something else at the center, and that's all temporary, and it comes into being by time, and it goes out of being by time, and that's the nature of things of this world. But the devotee doesn't take shelter of those temporary things, knowing them to be temporary, but take shelter of eternal things, based upon the eternal person. And the opulences go with the soul. When the soul moves from this position to that position, the opulences go, because it's not impermanent, not created by time. He writes, every living entity has the propensity to love someone. We can see that if someone has no object of love, he generally directs his love to a pet, like a cat or a dog. Thus, the eternal propensity for love of the living entities is always searching for a place to reside. From this verse, we can learn that we can love the Supreme Personality of Godhead as our dearmost object, and there will be no cheating and no end to such love. No disappointments. Yay. Now check the box. Krishna, no. Why not? Well, you know, I'm used to this one. I'm conditioned to this one. I've been checking the box over here, this one, for so long, I don't even look at that box. And so, it goes on. Cheating and disappointment and ends of such relationships. We shall eternally enjoy the relationship with the Supreme Lord in different aspects. A special feature of this verse is the acceptance of the Supreme Lord as the Supreme Preceptor. Bhagavad Gita was spoken directly by the Supreme Lord, and Arjuna accepted Krishna as guru or spiritual master. Similarly, we should accept only Krishna as the supreme spiritual master. And there's a whole other page of purport. I'm not going to do the whole thing. Prabhupada goes on, next short paragraph is, when we say Krishna, we should understand it includes his whole entourage, his immediate, intimate associates. Take shelter of Krishna means with Krishna's associates. Or say it the other, if you take shelter of Krishna's associates, you're taking shelter of Krishna. Say it the other way. If you take shelter of Krishna, it implies you're taking shelter of Krishna's associates. I'll say it this way. There's multiple choice question with two options, A or B. When you go to the spiritual world, when that fine, wonderful day comes, A, it's just going to be you and Krishna. Or B, it's going to be Krishna and all of the loving associates who are surrounding his lotus feet, and you join them. It's real easy. Krishna's not alone. Krishna, of course, means Krishna and his confidential devotees. Krishna is not alone. When we speak of Krishna, he has this in quotes. Krishna means Krishna in his name, in his form, in his qualities, in his abode, in his associates. Krishna is never alone. For the devotees of Krishna are not impersonalists. For example, a king is always associated with a secretary, commander, a servant, so much paraphernalia. As soon as we accept Krishna and his associates as our preceptors, no ill effects can destroy our knowledge. Beautiful. Which means it's a different kind of knowledge. It's a different kind of possession. It's not created by time, it's not destroyed by time. It's not created by circumstance or destroyed by circumstance. It's constitutional. It's not conditional. And in that sense, Prabhupada is explaining the statement, that Kapila Deva is making, that the opulences of the devotees, the friendship, the relationships of the devotees, the knowledge of the devotees, is not destroyed. But you can't say that about something material. The relationships are destroyed. The knowledge that someone has is destroyed. However much, you know, develop knowledge and this and that and, you know, become a whole encyclopedia personality. What happens at the time of death? It's gone. Propensity may continue, yes, but that knowledge that you gathered in your information basket, it's gone. Your computer, your hard drive crashed. It's gone. The data's gone. And then you got to do it all over again. Start gathering the next lifetime. You've got a propensity. You got to gather a bunch of information. So that's child's play from a transcendentalist perspective. But rather the knowledge, the other option is the knowledge of a devotee. It's eternal. It's not destroyed. It's beautiful. And that's in this lifetime. If the light goes on, says, hey, wait a minute. Is there another option besides this material program? What's it like? And if we understand what it is and how simple and sublime it is to go down that path, what's holding us back? It's our attachments to the other. And those attachments may be deep. In some cases they are. They're really deep. What to do? Deep attachments. And I see something that's brighter. Then you engage in sadhana. You cultivate to your capacity something that you can sustainably do every day, every day, every day, regularly. And with the support of the associates of the Supreme Lord, the devotees, and on the strength of that, like the bundle of sticks example, Krishna will help you. You'll get spiritual strength in addition to your own strength. That's better. And continue and cultivate. And the capacity becomes greater, and Krishna gives more resources and facilities that you can then accept, and so on. Spiritual progress goes on. And those relationships are not taken by time, because they're not created by time or circumstance. That's what Kapila Deva is saying. He is describing, this is the title of the chapter, is The Glories of Devotional Service. Here's the last sentence. The conclusion is, the conclusion is that the time influence cannot act upon devotees who have accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as everything. So we're given, even we're very limited, we're given the opportunity to experience that which is beyond our experience. Because we're limited, our experience is going to be limited. But the opportunity is given to experience that, the timelessness of the spiritual reality, the opulences of Vaikuntha, the opulences of the heavenly realm, the mystic cities of yogic perfection. Even if you don't want them, just want Krishna, that's all. And that will become, at least the opportunity is given. You can experience that. That's what Kapila Deva is saying. It is, as you progress, it becomes fuller and fuller. It becomes complete. Just stay on the path and continue to properly cultivate. Hear the message, bring it into your heart, live accordingly to your capacity, get some realizations and some strengthened faith from that step by step by step moving, so much so that as that faith increases, you go back to the source, the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and the associates of Krishna from whom you heard that, are you here again with more complete attention, and so on. And then abhyasa, continue to practice and cultivate Krishna consciousness. And it, the creeper of bhakti grows by that process. And the other things fall away by that process. Okay. Hare Krishna. Any discussion or questions or something you'd like to bring up? Yes.
So how you said that we can't be attached to anything and everything's Lord's Lord. So like our sisters and brothers.
Yeah.
No,
no, no, you have sisters and brothers and you have a relationship with them. But you should recognize that's temporary. Krishna has made some arrangements for you to have sisters and brothers and mom and dad and friends. And what's the purpose of that? To serve them, to appreciate them, to do as best Krishna gives you the ability to try to help them in their journey back to Krishna. And they in turn help you to the best of their ability in your journey back to Krishna. So we're assisting one another in our journey back to Krishna. Krishna's made an arrangement. These are my brothers, these are my sisters, these are my family members, these are my friends, this is our community. We have so many opportunities to try to assist one another in our journey back to Krishna. And it's very special. The sisters and brothers part is very special. We didn't choose. I want that one. I don't want that one. We didn't choose. We were provided by Krishna's arrangement that which is going to best help us, something that we can learn about ourselves and our relationship with Krishna through these family members. So family members are very special in that way. Is that all right? I hope you like your brothers and sisters. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful lecture. Question is, where to draw the line for Yukta Vairagya?
Where to draw the line?
I keep on collecting things, and we throw it in the name of Yukta Vairagya, and we use
them. No. two things, just from the... Did you hear the question in the back? Where do we draw the line for Yukta Vairagya? For example, should we just go on through the duration of our life gathering things and collecting things, saying one day I may use this in Krishna service? A garage full of stuff. And I have to go get a storage space or more stuff and more stuff and more stuff. Because one day I may use it in Krishna service. Where do we draw the line? So obviously the answer to that is no, we don't do that. So where do you draw the line? I would say two things, minimum. One of the qualities of a devotee, a Vaishnava Brahman, is simplicity. Samantamaktapakshantyarjavamehajagyanabhigyanamastikyampramakarmasobhavajam. One of those qualities is simplicity. What does simplicity mean? And where do you draw the line? So, before you, this is a recommendation, kind of general. Before you go out and get something, think twice about it. Do I really need this for my devotional service? And then think a third time about it, a fourth time about it. You know, let some time pass and see, is this really something that I need for my devotional service. And if it, you know, passes all those filters, then go ahead. But make sure that you use it simply in devotional service. Two families, one of them is seated in this room, had recently the experience of moving. And they realized when they moved, they had so much stuff that they didn't need. One of the families was recently just in Minneapolis. They moved from house A to house B because the house A was old, needed repair, so they got house B. And when they started moving from house A to house B in the same city, they realized they just had so much stuff. So rather than do the garage sale kind of thing that happens in America, they just put it out in their front lawn and said, you know, please take me. And people would come and see and say, do you have an extra couch? I said, sure, we got an extra couch. Got an extra table? Look at this one. Take it. So they just simplified to at least a closer range of what they need. Or there's another devotee, I think I'll not mention his name, although he probably wouldn't mind. He was living in the ashram in our Brooklyn temple years ago, and he had this propensity of collecting things. So he had an annual ritual where he would take all his things and spread it out in the room and decide which things didn't he need. And then he would get rid of those things and then pack up the rest of the stuff and store the rest of the stuff. And then in the course of the year he gets more things and do this ritual and I don't need these things. And trying at least to get rid of the things he didn't need and just keep the things that I need. That's not a bad program. You know, get rid of the things you don't need. And the things that you need, make sure, so this is the other side of where you draw the line. Things that you need, okay. And as your Krishna consciousness increases, you find there's less things that you need. You may find that there's more facilities for different types of devotional service that you are called upon to engage in. So that may result in accumulation of more stuff or more things. But try to minimize it. And then the other where you draw the line principle is, don't bite off more than you can chew. Don't take on things. Oh, I you know, maybe I can use this in Krishna service, and you end up getting enamored by this. I was engaged in a conversation with an email dialogue with a teenager somewhere in North America, and she was deciding whether or not to get a Facebook account. And we went to the same, you know, where do you draw the line conversation. And I was sharing with her very frankly, here's what I've seen. It's not a facility for keeping in touch with my devotee friends, it's a facility for wasting time. And then intrusions and things that have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness get, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. So do you really need this? And then if you do it, those who are your friends see that you do it, they're going to think, oh, I have to get one too. Because, you know, it's a fad or a fashion. Are you thinking that way? Because others are doing, you have to do it because it's a fad or fashion. Is it something that's really going to facilitate your devotional service, or is it something that's going to suck energy by maintaining this thing, whatever that does, you know, besides Facebook, some thing? Is it going to engage you with my service, or is it something that's going to be a facility for you to engage in Krishna service? And you know, look very closely at that principle before you the vairagya, just jump into the pool. So those are two areas of consideration where you draw the line. And, you know, be patient. Give it some time before you become a consumer. and get consumed. Something else? Yes.
Maharaj, I had a question on the relationship with Krishna. So you said, nobody or nothing can take away the relationship, our relationship with Krishna, but can we take it away ourselves? Because in our current state, we have lost that relationship.
It's forgotten, but it's not taken away. It's constitutional. Covered, but not gone. So even we can't. Krishna can, because he can do anything, but the soul is constitutionally part of Krishna, so you can say that is something Krishna can't do. He doesn't interfere with our free will choices, including the covering category, but he doesn't take away our relationship. Oh, you're garbage. Throw us away. He doesn't do that. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned two kinds of time. One was the past, present, future, illusory time that Krishna destroys and creates with. The other one was the eternal time. Please don't explain what's that.
Well, I can just say the same thing in other languages, but it ends up being saying the same thing. Prabhupada has characterized eternal time in this way, where time is conspicuous by its absence. Time, as we know it, is conspicuous. Conspicuous? Obvious? You know the meaning? Conspicuous? Conspicuous means blatantly obvious. It's like, if there's a presidential inauguration and the president doesn't show up. He's conspicuous by his absence. Somebody's wedding and the bride or the groom doesn't show up. They're conspicuous by their absence. Blatantly obvious that they're not there. So time, as we know it, is conspicuous by its absence. So it's mysterious. Deeply mysterious, where time is eternal, but there's a sense of passage of time. As in Krishna's eightfold pastime, Ashtakaliya Leela. There's the morning pastime, there's the midday pastime, there's the afternoon pastime, there's the return home pastime, there's the evening pastimes. And all night long, Krishna's enjoying pastimes. There's eightfold divisions of time. But time is eternal.
So it's a paradox.
It's very bewildering. It's an enigma. How do you understand events? Because they're events, but it's without past, present, and future.
Because we haven't had that experience.
That's well, we've forgotten that experience. It's we're also eternal. And we've forgotten. We're covered. We're in La La Land. We're in Maya. We've forgotten. Something else? Yes?
Surrender in devotional terms means...
Surrender in devotional terms means?
Means it also increases confidence. How to understand that, surrender increasing the confidence?
Well, I would use a different word, if you don't mind. Faith. Or trust. It's close to confidence. But when you... when you receive something genuine, you feel something. Like, for example, when you eat, you feel something. My hunger is going away, and so forth. You feel something. And similarly, when you're in touch with that which is genuine, you feel something. That is a happiness and detachment from other things when you receive something genuine. And that then then you act on that, and it expands, it increases. And that increases faith. So faith in this means the phrase that Kapila Dev uses, or is translated as pessimism towards material identity. I don't think it's a good program. Although I'm scripted for that program, I don't think it's a good program. The pessimism towards material identity and faith towards spiritual reality, or as you say, confidence. The surrender is ultimately unto Krishna, and material consciousness says, I'm doing things, kartaham iti manyate, that Krishna's not in the picture. I don't have to factor Krishna in the picture because I'm just doing things. Ask any atheist or gross materialist. You have to factor Krishna into the picture. They have confidence in their own prowess. Little Hiranyakashipus and Ravanas, you know, miniature versions. My own strength, my own ability, my own capacity, my own cleverness. I'll figure it out. I figured out so many things, I'm just going to figure out this one too and keep going. Material consciousness. That's where their confidence goes, the faith, so forth. So it's surrendered to Krishna, moves in the other direction. Then faith is created, Prabhupada writes, in Bhagavad Gita purport, in the association of devotees. Faith is created in the association of those who are carrying faith. And then you act on that and it increases your faith or your confidence in taking shelter of Krishna. It's a gradual evolving process. And that surrender is also. It can be done at once, if you're Katvanga Maharaj, or it can be gradual, as all the rest of us. Anything else? Okay. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Well, same on the time thing, that as you said, the time is eternal time. There is no past in that. Now, whatever the past tense Krishna performed at the age of 5 or 6, and whatever past tense when he was in the Kurukshetra or Dwarka, that will not be considered as the past, eternal past time.
From our perspective, it looks like. From Krishna's perspective, it's eternal. Meaning, those pastimes are eternally being enacted somewhere. The example Prabhupada gives is the rising of the sun. Somewhere on this planet Earth, the sun is rising. And the sun is rising. And the sun is rising. And the sun is rising. There's no cessation to the sun rising, although there's day and night. Similarly, Krishna appears, and Krishna appears, and Krishna appears, and Krishna appears. Krishna has 5-year-old, Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, and Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, and Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill. It's an eternal pastime. Somewhere, Krishna is performing those pastimes because they're eternal. From our perspective, they're coming and they're going. And therefore, Krishna was 5 years old, etc. But they're pastimes. As much as Krishna appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, and within moments, Krishna was a little baby. And those forms were quite different. So whether it happens in less than a moment, or it happens over another period of time, those are pastimes that are eternal. Not under the control of time as we know it. They're under another kind of control. Krishna's direct control is internal potency. And internal potency is not ruled by time as we know it. Does that help? All right. Thank you very much. Shalom.
Yeah.